The solemn faces of men and women pass by slowly. Accused by Jimmy McGovern. Starring Juliet Stevenson and Peter Capaldi. Written by Alice Nutter and Jimmy McGovern. A middle-aged woman, Helen Ryland, is sitting in a holding cell. She's wearing heels, a floral dress, and a dark blue cardigan. Her hair is blonde and curls outwards just below ear length. She stops reading her book and looks up as a guard unlocks a security gate in the corridor. A female officer opens the cell.
They're starting again.
Helen puts down her book, a guide to Ibiza and Formentera, and quietly gets up. She pulls her cardigan across her chest and steps out of the cell. The officer cuffs her to her own wrist and they begin to walk down the corridor. In the courtroom.
Would you like to take the oath on the Bible or by affirmation?
Affirmation. I don't believe in God anymore. Well, you'll notice that I no longer have anyone representing me. I told my lawyer that I was going to take the stand and say to you, yes, I did it, and here's why. And she said if I did that, she'd quit. And she has. Yes, I did it. And here's why.
So we're going to shift probably about five plates. Forward, reverse, right? There's no brake, so you reverse to lose speed, right?
Dave!
Yeah, 2 minutes. Big red button cuts the power. Up, down. Now it's going to raise by about 10 to 15.
I need you
got
now!
This and that round there. 10 minutes practice, you start auto picking, right?
Dave rushes off, leaving the two young lads alone with a forklift.
That bastard, isn't he?
Helen's teaching.
Yes, but one at a time, please. Now, how old do you think the solar system is? Tegan.
Really old, like 156 million years, miss.
Good guess, Tegan. But it's much, much older. It's 4.6 billion years old. So if you think that human life has been around for about 200,000 years, and we live to be, say, 75 years of age, well, that's not much, is it? Compared to the age of the solar system.
Lunchtime, and Helen makes a phone call.
If it's on answer, okay.
As she waits for the call to connect, she bangs on the window and points at two boys fighting in the playground. At the warehouse, all the employees are standing around in deathly silence, staring at a pile of collapsed shelving. Police officers are attending to the scene. A paramedic retrieves a mobile phone and hands it to an officer, who places it in an evidence bag. It continues to ring as he puts it to one side. At the heart of the wreckage is the lifeless body of a young trainee. The manager sees the word "mum" flashing on the victim's mobile and covers his face with his hand.
Hey, it's Rob. Leave a message.
Siobhan's eating your sandwiches. What's the point of making them if you're always going to leave them? I'm not stupid, you know. I know you do it on purpose. Don't just eat chips.
Now, Helen's on her house phone.
And he's not answered.
Her husband's watching TV.
Should have been back for six.
He makes a face when Helen gets in the way.
Have you got a number for Michael? Can I call you back in a minute?
Helen sees a police car pull up and retreats behind the curtain.
I hid. Don't ask me why, but I hid. I'm out of view, they're out of view. Maybe they're next door. Nothing to do with me, nothing to do with Rob. It's next door. As long as the bell doesn't ring. Please, God, do not let that bell ring.
Dread fills Helen's face.
Bloody hell, what an extra time, Helen.
She puts down the phone and approaches the door. Frank remains glued to the telly.
Mrs. Ryland. Are you in on your own?
Frank? Frank!
What is it?
Frank tears himself away from the game, then sees the two officers.
Can we come in?
Come in.
Helen shakes her head gently, fearing the worst. Frank shows the officers into the lounge and switches off the TV.
We've come to inform you that your son, Robert, was fatally injured at Maxfield's Wholesalers this morning.
Injured? Where is he? Is he in the hospital?
Helen is dead. What happened?
I'm afraid we don't have any more information. You'll have to call the station for more details. If you ring this number and quote this reference, you'll need to phone the coroner's office in the morning. There's no point in doing it now. There'll be nobody there.
Helen holds the police document in her shaky hand as she calls the phone number.
Hello, can I help you?
Yes, two officers have just been, and they told me that my son... has been killed, and they said I should, yes, D-O-A... D-O-A 9461.
Just hold on a minute, please.
Frank sitting next to her, his fingertips pressed anxiously to his lips. Helen and Frank are standing over Rob's body in the hospital chapel. Helen strokes her son's forehead.
Mum's here.
Frank's eyes are red, his face is haggard. Helen peels back the sheet covering Rob, only to discover that he's inside a body bag, which has been folded just enough to reveal his face and shoulders.
You did a post-mortem?
Yes.
Did you use anything?
Sorry?
Did you use any of his organs?
No, I promise you, we didn't take anything. He's...
Is it too late now? Because he wanted to be a donor, you see, in the event of something like this, he wanted his organs used.
It is too late. I'm sorry. We needed to know at the time of death.
But nobody told us he was dead.
Helen places a gentle kiss on Rob's forehead. She and Frank move towards the door, and Frank looks back at the mortuary attendant with a pained expression. They leave together. Helen's sitting alone in her dining room in the pale morning light. She opens a police evidence bag and takes out Rob's mobile phone. She stares at it with a numb expression, just holding it causing her hurt. After some consideration, she presses a button. She cuts the message short. Then Frank comes through the front door with a carrier bag. He heads for the kitchen. Helen scowls as Frank pours himself a stiff drink. He glimpses her disapproving face through the serving hatch.
You cope your way, I'll cope mine.
He sits alone in the kitchen with his drink. They arrive at the warehouse in the middle of the day. Helen gets out of the car and stares grimly at the building. Frank offers his support by taking her hand. Inside, they're met by the manager and two other men.
You're Rob's mother.
Helen.
Alan Maxfield. Good to meet you.
And you. This is his dad, Frank.
How do you do?
Dave Price, General Foreman.
This is Stephen Simpson. Right. Shall we?
I spoke to Rob and his mate.
Michael,
yeah. Good lads. I said to Dave, here, how come two lads like that are doing agency work when we've got full time? There's not a patch on them. He was a credit to you. Credit to you both.
Thanks.
Maxfield leads them through the warehouse and pauses over the spot where Rob died.
It was here. He hit that section, the whole lot came down.
Frank cranes his neck up at the towering shelves. Maxfield looks uneasy.
How?
Yeah, he lost control of the truck.
Helen struggles to come to terms with it.
I'd just like to say that if there's anything we can do, we'll do it. It's just that nothing like this has ever happened to us before, you see. We put the welfare of the workers above everything else. The boy he was with... Michael will tell you that they did all the health and safety stuff, and they did it conscientiously. But if there's any problems or questions, please shout. Did you have a question?
Did he suffer?
No.
From what I've heard, it was almost instantaneous.
Frank looks sickened. He turns to leave and glances up at Helen. She joins him and they start to walk away.
I'll walk back with Frank and Helen.
Helen pauses and takes one final look at the place where Rob was killed. Helen makes her way across a council estate and knocks on a front door. A young woman holding a baby answers the door.
Is Michael in?
No, he's at work.
Can I come in? Please.
She enters.
Sorry about me.
Oh, no.
The woman clears away some mugs.
Did Michael say what?
Brian, what is that you've got in your mouth? No, take it out of your mouth. That's dirty. What have I said about putting things in your mouth?
Helen picks up a soft toy and holds it.
Where's the dog?
Oh, we haven't got one. Sign's just to keep smackheads at bay. I think Michael's probably just popped into his mum's. I have no idea how long he's going to be before we get...
The door opens and Michael comes in.
Say hello to Daddy. Come here, sweetheart. Here you go.
He cuddles his child.
Agency still getting you work?
Brenda would have gone to nursery today. She had to pay for us. Felt really bad.
I'm lucky enough to get a full-time job.
Michael, you were there. You were with him. Did he suffer?
He shakes his head.
Are you sure?
Michael weeps and Helen hugs him. Later, she's at home on the phone.
You see, I've arranged my son's funeral for next Thursday and I've been told to cancel it because I haven't got Alan Maxfield's permission. It's Angela, isn't it? Well, that is my problem, Angela. I need your boss's permission to bury my son. That's my problem. I'll do it.
I need a shot.
Just leave the bloody thing alone, for God's sake!
Shut.
Well, yeah, have you got a mobile number for him, please?
Her temper grows as she listens to the person on the phone.
I'm coming round. Just try not to burn the place down.
Helen goes, leaving Frank alone. He lays his shirt out on the ironing board, but a sudden rush of grief causes him to falter. He leans over the board and sobs heavily. His body shakes and he sinks to his knees. Helen pulls into the warehouse car park. She walks with determination to the front door. Then she paces up and down reception, waiting to be seen. Dave Price comes out.
Good to see you again.
Good to see you.
Alan's out on business. Oh, I'd be talking to himself.
I've been waiting 11 days for permission to bury my son. 11 days. I can't believe for a moment that Alan Maxfield knows about this because he would not treat a grieving mother in such an appalling fashion. So please, bring him here.
I can't.
She's taken aback by his bluntness.
Right. I'll wait.
She sits and waits. Some time passes, and still she remains rooted to the seat. Eventually, Maxfield and Simpson arrive.
Helen, I am so sorry. I knew absolutely nothing about this.
I'm going to get onto everybody right away, and it'll all go ahead on Thursday as planned.
My fault. Absolutely fuming about this, Helen. It should never have happened. I'm so, so sorry.
All my fault. I objected without consulting Alan.
You objected?
Yes.
Sorry to be rude. I don't mean to be rude, but what's my son's funeral got to do with you?
I'm Alan's lawyer.
Helen returns to her car and spots Michael leaving the warehouse.
Michael!
Hi.
You're working here?
Yeah.
Permanent?
Yeah. Well, 6 months probation and then permanent, yeah.
He said you impressed him. You both impressed him.
Did he?
Funeral's Thursday. 2 o'clock.
Right.
You'll be there.
I can't make it.
What?
I'm working, aren't I?
You'll get time off. You died in there, Michael. You'll give you time off.
I'm sorry.
Helen's on the house phone.
You are his friend, Michael. So, ring me. Please.
Frank sitting at the table with a drink and a fag.
Lads, I served my time. We stuck together.
I need you to come with me tomorrow.
We should have let him join the Navy. He'll learn a trade in the Navy. Talk about ironic. Keep him out of the armed forces because it's too dangerous and send him.
You're blaming me?
No.
You are. I made him go to that place, so you're blaming me?
I'm not.
I'm going to the police station tomorrow. But I don't want to go there on my own. Will you come with me, please?
You're wasting your
time.
Will
you come with me, please?
It's a health and safety issue, really, so, yes, it's just me.
Did you look at the CCTV film?
No.
No?
The cameras weren't working that day.
What? They told you that?
Yes.
And you believed them?
Well, why not?
For God's sake. You prick. Sorry.
Frank walks out.
He was with his friend, Michael. He must have seen everything.
Yes, we got a statement from him.
Oh.
It absolves the company of all blame. He says it was all your son's fault, Mrs. Ryland.
I know something stinks. CCTV cameras not working. Alan Maxfield frightened to open his mouth unless his lawyer's there. Michael too ashamed to look me in the eye.
Helen and Frank emerge from their house dressed in black. A hearse is parked outside and a congregation of mourners are standing around talking. Several young lads have come wearing footy shirts with Rob written on their backs. It's too much for Frank. And he goes back inside. Helen notices Maxfield standing on his own. He squirms uncomfortably as Helen marches over.
You're only here, so you can say I even attended the boy's funeral, Your Honour.
I swear that's not why I'm here.
You lied to me. You told me he didn't suffer. Michael lied too, but he lied for good reasons, but you lied for bad reasons, for money reasons or legal reasons or God knows what reasons. So please go.
He walks away without objection. Frank comes back outside and joins Helen, who's talking to the young lads. They lead a procession on foot behind the hearse.
I was run over once when I was a kid, and I lay there for a couple of minutes wondering if I was dead. And then someone tried to move me, and the pain came flooding in. That's what it was like when I realised that Rob's death was suspicious. Everything hurt, but I was alive again. But not Frank. He saw no good in such pain. He wanted it numbed with booze.
Helen picks up an ashtray.
Can you just leave that? I'll clean it up before we come to bed.
It stinks. If I don't do it now, it'll still be here in the morning.
Look, I'll sort it. I'm capable of moving an ashtray.
She picks up a bottle of whiskey, most of which has been drunk.
Yes. Have you drunk all this? Yes. And don't even think about bollocking me, Helen. Today of all days, don't you even think about it, because I've got a few home truths for you.
Oh, I'm listening.
It's about time you had a few home truths.
I'm listening.
First, nobody gives a shit that Rob's dead. Nobody gives a shit. So you can shove your decorum up your ass, shove your dignity up your ass, because nobody gives a shit. Secondly, I'm sick of you looking down your nose at me. I'm sick of you treating me like a child. What you see here is grief. This is the acceptance of grief. A mature and adult acceptance of grief.
Adult?
That's not what I see when I look at you. Do you know what I see when I look at you? I see a woman running around like a blue-ass fly because she's too scared and too bloody immature to face the fact that our son is dead. Robbie is dead!
You're immature, you're a big
and
kid!
All of this Sherlock Holmes
since when
stuff, this detective shit.
Since when has binge drinking been an answer to anything?
No. You listen to me. It's about time I did a bit of spouting, a bit of pontificating.
You're drunk.
Yeah, well,
sometimes, when an ape dies, the other animals withdraw and stare into space. They refuse to interact with each other. We were worse than apes. We turned on each other.
In bed at night.
Sorry.
Helen has her back to him, but she puts a hand over her shoulder for him to hold. He takes it, then cuddles up close to her.
All those things we did with him before he was safe, alive. I resented them. I knew he'd never remember them, see? But after five, traipsing around Norton Towers, Disney, fishing, footy, he'd remember them. And 50, 60 years after us going, he'd still remember them. But he's gone before us. And so have those memories. And I feel so cheated.
She kisses his hand.
Sing to me.
I can't.
Sing to me.
Oh, you are a lucky kid. Your face just like a dustbin lid. When he hears the things that you did, you get a belt from your dad.
This is an inquest into the death of Robert Ryland.
Now, this might be a little confusing to you, but I'm opening and adjourning this inquest.
because the Crown Prosecution Service might bring a manslaughter charge in connection with Robert's death. And they might not, of course. We'll reopen when they've decided.
Frank and Helen turn to each other with confused expressions. Helen returns to school and finds Siobhan handing out textbooks to her pupils. Siobhan offers a reassuring word.
Good morning, Fiona.
Good morning, Miss.
Now, if you could all get out your planners and turn to the week starting
Miss?
June. Yes, dear.
Miss, we got you something. The class, we all got it.
The girl carries over a sapling in a pot.
It's a plant for your son. It's an oak tree, so it lasts a long time.
Helen struggles to react.
Is that all right, Miss?
She takes the tree and places it on her desk. With her back turned to the children, she dabs the tears from her eyes.
Right, now, so if you could all get out your planners.
Frank's in the garden, planting the oak tree. Helen watches from afar as he shovels soil around the delicate stem with great care and determination. Then he pours water over the soil, and Helen's face softens as she observes the tender moment. Now they're both with their lawyer.
I'm sorry, Helen, but the Crown Prosecution Service is not going to bring charges.
And that's it?
Yes, I'm sorry.
So my son is killed, and no one held to account. No one asked to explain. Would you accept that?
Helen's sitting on Michael's doorstep. Michael arrives with his wife and baby.
Michael.
Sorry. Don't know anything.
They go inside and shut the door on Helen. Helen sits back down on the doorstep and hugs her knees. She overhears Michael and his wife.
She sat down. She sat down. Tell her to go.
If that had been you.
Do you want to move?
If it was me that had been left like that.
You're always going on about it. You're desperate to get out of this dump.
If it was your mother that was left out there, would you leave her out there?
Do you not mind being the only kid?
Michael.
A hardness takes hold of Helen's face as she hears the argument. But that gives way to hope when Michael opens the door. She looks up at him.
Will you help me, Michael?
Michael, Helen, and Frank are with the lawyer.
Never had a job. Not a proper one with regular money and that. We need to get out of that house. We've been robbed twice this year. I'm ashamed of what I did, but I did it for Leanne and I did it for Ryan. On the day Rob died, Alan Maxfield offered me a permanent contract. All he had to say was we'd been trained to use that forklift truck. But we weren't. We had a 5-minute demonstration. That's all, and that's not training. And I said in my statement that we'd had a full health and safety rundown, but we hadn't.
We could use Michael's statement to go for review. Review of the decision not to prosecute. But it's risky and expensive. Your cost could be 15 grand.
15 grand?
And if we lose, then...
We won't lose.
15 grand.
But if we did, you'd have to pay the other side's costs too. Could you manage that?
If we win, they prosecute Alan Maxfield.
15?
Yes.
We get a second mortgage.
We can't afford a first mortgage. Never mind a second mortgage.
We can.
We can't.
We'll leave you to talk.
No. You're leaving her to talk. You're leaving me to listen.
Frank.
Who are you doing this for anyway? It's not for Rob. It's not going to bring him back.
Oh, I know.
And do you think that he would want this? Do you think he would want us to get up to our eyes in debt just for you to prove a point?
How dare you?
Frank leans against the palm of his hand.
Well, this is the fitted kitchen moment, isn't it? Man slices his dick off at work. Surgeon says, you're going to get 40 grand comp. You can get 4-inch penis for 20 grand. You can get 6-inch for 30. You can get the big 8-inch penis for the full 40. He says he fancies the 8-inch, but his wife's there. So the surgeon says, just as our lawyer has, I'll leave you to talk. 5 minutes later, the surgeon comes back. You've made up your mind what you're having. The man nods. We're having a fitted kitchen.
Helen manages a smile and leans closer to Frank, who kisses her on the forehead. Now they're in the High Court. The judge returns.
I'm afraid we won't reach a decision today, but we'll meet again tomorrow.
Helen's tossing a load of stuff out of the house onto the front lawn.
What are you doing?
Oxfam.
I used them.
No, you don't. When did you last play cricket? You don't play anything anymore. You don't do anything anymore. You just sit in front of the telly and drink and smoke. Rot.
Frank walks away looking insulted. Helen pauses when she realizes she's holding Rob's skateboard. Frank stomps down the street, struggling to put his jacket on. His frustration reaches breaking point and he sits on a wall, seething with anger. He pants heavily, overwhelmed with emotion. Helen enters Rob's bedroom and switches on the light. It still bears all the hallmarks of a typical young man. There are posters of the Apollo moon landing and beers of the world. On the walls are photographs of friends. From the back of the door hangs a grey hoodie. Helen sits on the bed and looks around. On the bedside table are some toiletries, a video game controller, and a guide to Ibiza and Formentera. She picks up the guidebook and opens it. She begins to read. At night, Frank trudges heavily up the stairs. He stops on the landing when he notices Helen asleep on Rob's bed. She's still holding onto the guide with one hand. Frank goes into the bedroom and covers Helen with the duvet. He kisses her on the cheek and turns out the light. The next day at the High Court.
Thank you for your patience. I realise we've been deliberating for what may seem an inordinate amount of time. But we felt it was crucial to give this case proper, consideration.
Helen smiles hopefully at Frank. Then she arrives at work with a distant expression.
However, Michael Lang did not seem to us to be a sufficiently believable witness. In view of this, we feel a successful prosecution would be very difficult. With this in mind, we uphold the Crown Prosecution Service's decision not to prosecute.
Siobhan joins Helen on a bench in the playground.
It's a fucker.
Helen nods weakly.
Tonight I'm getting you pissed and laid.
I've been married 20 years.
Well, you'll be used to doing it in that order then.
At a busy social club, Siobhan carries a tray of drinks over to Helen.
Beer and tequila.
Oh, I'm only staying an hour, Siobhan.
Ah, you're not. Last night, my tight bastard of a husband says to me, get your coat. I says, why, where are you taking me? He says, nowhere, I'm turning the bloody leggy off. So if you go, I'll have to go too, so come on.
Like there's no fucking tomorrow.
They down the shots of tequila.
I've got me mate back. We're having another.
No.
Aye. Oh. Did you manage it, John?
Come on.
Will I just do my own version? Right. A pair of knickers with a stain between them. A spot of petrol where you tried to clean them.
Helen's smile fades as her mind drifts off. Then she's brought back to reality and forces another smile. In the taxi on the way home, she's tearful and tired. In the coroner's court.
You might remember that last time we met, I adjourned the inquest into Robert Ryland's death pending the Crown Prosecution Service's decision on whether or not to prosecute. That matter is now settled. And so I'm now reopening this inquest. I'd like to hear from the family first. Mrs. Ryland, would that be agreeable to you?
Time and time again, the law had failed us, but I clung to the idea that the inquest would right everything, that the truth would come out, that Alan Maxfield would be held responsible for my son's death. All those courtrooms, all those knockbacks, but I still had hope. I was like a battered wife, getting hurt, but thinking, you know, one last go. This time, it'll be different.
Did Robert go out the night before he died?
There was a match on Sky. He watched it in the pub.
Where he had several drinks.
He didn't come home drunk. So if you're trying to infer that Rob was drunk the next morning, forget it. He went out with a tenner that I gave him, and he came back with £5.40, having spent £4.60 on 2 pints of lager. I know this because there was £5.40 in the plastic bag, along with his phone and his wallet and his other... effects.
Michael Lang is mistaken. Both boys were given detailed instructions on operating the forklift, and they had 2 or 3 hours training. Now, whether they listened, whether they paid enough attention, or... I know that when they were outside the office, Ryland seemed to be cracking jokes all the time. The door was open. I found it distracting.
I'd just like to express my deepest sympathies. I know how hard it must be for you, but I hope this verdict helps. The verdict is accidental death. I hope you find some comfort from the fact that nobody was to blame for your son's death.
Helen is numbed by the words. She appears to focus on the cold black royal crest on the wall. Everyone leaves, then Frank gets up, but Helen remains rooted to her seat. Speaking in the present day.
Accidental death. Blood drains. You know, you hear people say that all the time. The blood drained from him. Well, when you get told that your son is dead, the blood really does drain. You can feel it drain. You feel your veins widen and the blood just drops. And it drained again when the coroner said no one was responsible for my son's death. Someone was to blame. Alan Maxfield.
Helen drives home alone and parks on the street. She runs up the stairs and into her bedroom. She retrieves the evidence bag from the bedside table and pours out the contents. A wallet, a mobile, some loose change, and a security pass for Maxfield's warehouse. She takes the security pass and uses it to let herself into the building. Clutching the Abitha guidebook, she marches into Maxfield's office.
Have you ever been to Abitha? The Carthaginians founded it, lived there till the Romans wiped them out. Then the Arabs settled there for 500 years, until the Catalans laid siege, tore down the mosques and built churches.
How did you get in?
Then the Bohemians arrived in the 60s and 70s and turned it into a party island. Rob was saving up to go there.
How did you get in here?
His swipe card. It was in a plastic bag. Another of his effects. All his mates knew about Abitha was clubbing, but, you know, Rob was different. I mean, yes, he'd stay up all night dancing, but next day he'd be wandering around the house with a book in his hand. And after he died, I found this book on Abitha beside his bed.
What do you want, Mrs. Ryland?
I want you to say that you're sorry Rob never got to Abitha. That he never made his 21st. Or even finished his book. Say he didn't need to die in your warehouse. That you coated him in so much... so much shit. There was none left to stick to you. I want you to say that you are sorry for all that. And when you have, I'll go away and get on with my life.
It was an accident.
She bottles her anger.
There's no one here but me and you. It's just between us. I need to hear it.
Maxfield appears torn. He tries to find the words, but struggles.
Sorry. I mean, people say it all the time. They bump into each other in supermarkets and they say it automatically, instinctively. I'm sorry. Even when it's not their fault. I'm sorry!
Unable to look at her, he gets to his feet and turns his back. He looks guilt-ridden.
My lawyer won't let me.
Oh, Jesus.
Helen hangs her head, then gets up and leaves. Late at night, Helen gets out of her car outside the warehouse and retrieves a canister of petrol from the boot. She lets herself into the empty building and deliberately sets off the fire alarm. She walks down an aisle in the warehouse and sloshes petrol over the floor. She splashes the petrol over stacks of packaged goods and finally over a gas canister. She walks calmly back to her car and sits in the driver's seat at the side of the road. She doesn't flinch as an enormous fireball erupts through the roof of the warehouse. She watches the inferno with cold indifference. Maxfield appears at her window.
Do you know who killed your son? Shall I tell you who killed your son, you stupid bitch? A billion Chinese, half a billion Indians, all working for a pound a day. I'm paying 50 a day and I'm supposed to compete. That's who killed your son, you stupid mad bitch.
In a police station cell, Helen removes her belt and gives it to a female officer. She removes the laces from her right trainer and hands that over too. The officer watches as Helen pulls the laces out of her other trainer. Hunched over, she tugs at the laces, pulling them free. She gives it to the officer, who then walks out of the cell and slams the door shut. Present day, Helen's in court addressing the jury, and Frank's at home applying white face paint.
When you lose someone you love, it hurts. Of course it hurts. But imagine losing them over and over. Every time the law let me down, Rob died again. There's only so many times you can take that.
Frank draws a red smile on his face.
I teach. I'm used to being lied to. But the difference between Alan Maxfield and a child is that when you confront a 9-year-old child with the fact that they're lying, they own up. They say sorry. And when you've lost your child, an apology isn't all that much to ask. I wouldn't be here talking to you now if Alan Maxfield had just said sorry. My lawyer said that saying all this to you was stupid, that you'd throw the book at me. Well, fine, throw that book. The law's hit me so many times, I'm numb. I won't feel it. To hell with the law. Yes.
She gives the judge a pointed look. Frank's walking down a street dressed in a brightly coloured clown costume. A flock of pigeons take flight as he strides through them.
I can speak to you like this because I've learned so much. I'm an expert. I've paid the highest tuition fees in the world, you see. The death of my son. When you go away and consider what I've done, I'm asking you to reach a verdict based not on law, but on something I've been thirsting for. Something that Rob deserved and never got. Something I'm frightened may no longer exist. Justice. I'm asking you to give me justice.
Helen sits down.
However sympathetic you may feel, Helen Ryland stands accused of a very serious crime.
What's going on, Helen? Who are you, please?
Frank Ryland, husband of the accused. And yes, this is to show my contempt for this court, my contempt for any court, my contempt for anything to do with the law.
Officer Ryland.
My wife said that the law was a joke, and I argued, but not because I thought that she was wrong,
Mr.
but because
Ryland.
I didn't have her courage. If I'd have the guts she has, it'd be me and that dog. Sorry.
Mr. Ryland, have you finished? I'm going to call an officer of the court, and I'll deal with you when this case is finished. Do you understand?
Yes.
Helen smiles gratefully at Frank. Siobhan watches from the gallery, unsure of whether to laugh or cry.
By her own admission, she set fire to that warehouse and showed a total disregard for human life. Now, I'm not going to direct you to return a guilty...
Desperado, why don't you come to your senses?
Frank singing in a holding cell. Helen can hear him from her own cell.
I know that you've got your reasons. These things that are pleasing you can hurt you somehow. Don't you draw the Queen of Diamonds, boy. She'll pitch you.
She laughs gently to herself. Then an officer unlocks her door. Frank stops singing and peers through his viewing hatch.
Jury's coming back.
Helen steps out of the cell. The officer cuffs her own wrist to Helen's. As they walk down the corridor, Frank stretches his fingers out through the viewing hatch. Helen pauses and reaches for him. She clasps his fingers briefly before being pulled away.
Members of the jury, are you agreed upon a verdict?
We are.
Do you find the defendant guilty or not guilty of arson and willful destruction of property?
Not guilty.
And is that the verdict of you all?
Yes, it's unanimous.
Helen covers her face with her hands and sobs uncontrollably. She looks at the jury. She's led back down the corridor to Frank's cell.
Guilty.
Not guilty.
What?
Not guilty.
He throws his arms around her, and they share an emotional embrace.